Hello, everyone, and welcome to Digital Roadmap, an old-school gaming podcast. Here, we discuss and explore how the games of our past brought us the games we love today. I'm your host, Grant, and today we're discussing Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic from BioWare. Released back in 2003, this game came out just over a year after Attack of the Clones, and it explores a time 4,000 years before the Star Wars films ever took place. Now, the developer BioWare had already been established as one of the top-tier RPG companies at this point, thanks to the success of their Baldur's Gate franchise and Neverwinter Nights. So let's get right down to it and discuss this game. At the base level, the controls of the game are very straightforward for a computer game. You have WASD. At the time, A&D were initially a strafing mechanic. If you want, I personally rebound them as more of the camera turn, because there's not a lot of need for strafing in this game. It does have a mouse-only option. I mean, it's not directly, but you can play it almost completely with a mouse, using the right mouse button to turn around and the left mouse button while holding the right to run around. Bit of a proto-MMO mechanic at that point. The actual game mechanics underneath it are really fun. They're a variation of the D20 system, the old Dungeons & Dragons system. It had been turned into an open gaming license at the time, so anybody could modify and use it, basically to work with whatever kind of reality, what kind of variation of the fantasy mechanic they want. And they had actually put out an official Star Wars RPG based on that. So the game took those rules, and that's everything that's happening under the hood at the time while you're playing. They also use a skills versus feats option, so the way those break down is skills are more for challenges, be it lockpicking or, say, conversational skills, persuasion, intimidation, that kind of thing, whereas feats become more the jumping skills you can do, harder hits, tougher dodging skills, basically giving you a balance there where at certain levels you get skill points, certain levels you get feats, and you can kind of cater the gameplay, cater the style of game you're going to have to your own liking. Now, there is a very, very heavy focus on melee here. It really shows kind of the old Dungeons & Dragons mechanics, both because you're a Jedi and because of everything else, but it really punishes you if you try and shoot into combat. You're suffering a major penalty, or if somebody's attacking you with a melee weapon and you're trying to shoot them, you're suffering a very strong penalty at that point, which is, I mean, it really does pay to focus on your melee skills at that point. This game does have a morality mechanic in it where light side, dark side points, and if you're sitting somewhere in the middle, if you're not really a light side Jedi or a dark side Sith, you're going to be sitting in a zone and it's actually going to reflect it in your character portrait as gray, as opposed to blue light side, red dark side. The graphics for this game uses the Odyssey engine, which is a variation, a bit of an update of the Aurora engine, both of which were proprietary BioWare engines. The Aurora engine was used previously in Neverwinter Nights when they moved to a more of a 3D perspective instead of the isometric perspective. Isometric is kind of that top-down bird's eye view angle that you get in a lot of the older games. The Aurora engine was one of their first more of a 3D perspective, more of over-the-shoulder look that you could get for these games going, and really moved forward, really showed what they could do and what kind of world building they could do in this game, which is world building is something BioWare is known really, really well for, especially back in the day. Okay, so the core of the story of this game is you wake up on a ship. You have no memory because it's an RPG. Of course, you don't remember what was going on beforehand half the time. And you get off the ship, you escape it. There's your very, very early tutorial. You get in the escape pod with a guy named Karth. You go down to the planet Terrace. You wake up there, you kind of get into your tutorial planet, you learn the basics of what you're doing, you find out you have to rescue this Jedi Bastila. So you start working your way through that planet, you get access to different areas, you find out she's been kidnapped, you basically find a way to free her. She kind of frees herself for the most part, it's almost like she was waiting for something, waiting for the chance, and you just gave her the opportunity. And from there, you find a way off planet, it gets bombed, as you're leaving, you end up on Dantooine. It's a bit heartbreaking that way, because it's almost like all the good things you did, or all the nasty things you did, have no effect. They don't matter at all, except for you personally at that point, because the planet's just an absolute destroyed zone. But then you go to Dantooine, that's where you start getting into more of an open world tutorial, you learn what the game's all about, you get a better sense of what you're doing, kind of get more freedom, get a better sense, and then you find out your main quest of the game, which is finding these star maps. These little holographic maps that are there, that are going to point you towards the end destination. All they know, all the Jedi Council knows, is that Darth Revan, the former Darth Lord of the Sith, who's now been reported dead, his apprentice is in control, that he's basically gone to all these star maps, former Jedi, and now they need to know why he needed them and where he went with them. So you get your first star map, and then you're free to get off the planet. You can kind of go around, take a look at everything. You get your open world at that point, full open world, open galaxy, I guess. And you go from planet to planet getting star maps. After you've got two or three, you get captured by Saul Karrath, Karth's old mentor, who calls in Malak because there's something special about your character. That's where you get the big reveal of the game. That during that sequence, you learn that you are Darth Revan. you are the former Lord of the Sith, and you have to come to terms with that and decide, am I going to be a hero? Am I going to go back to being a villain? It's this kind of nature versus nurture. You know, am I the man I was? Am I the woman I was before this happened? Or do my new experiences define me as who I am? So after you go to all those planets, after you get all or star maps that you need, you find your way to the Star Force, this unknown planet. Again, big planet-destroying, massive factory thing. It's almost like it's a Star Wars staple. And you have to take down this... You basically have to, again, come to your moral event horizon. Am I good? Am I evil? And from there, you go to your final death fight. Just the absolute, like I said, just the gauntlet of murder. Now, if you get the happy ending, you go light side ending, you go back down to the unknown planet, and you have a classic Star Wars medal ceremony. If you go for the evil ending, you take a seat on top of a big crowd of people, and you continue your enslavement of the galaxy. Now, one of the important things to look at with this game, you kind of have to have an understanding of where it stood at the time, is Star Wars canon. Because before the Disney buyout, there were multiple levels of canon that all kind of interacted with each other and had different tiers of authority. The first one of that batch was called G-Canon, and that's where you got the films and anything that George Lucas had said. If he said it was canon, it was canon. After that was T-Canon, that's where you had the Clone Wars show, the cartoons, both the anime and the CG show. Those were canon, as long as it didn't conflict with anything from the level above it. After that, you got C-Canon. That's where you got the Expanded Universe books, the games, the tabletop games, the comic books, and even the RPGs. Like, that's where this game falls, is in that middle level of C-Canon. After that, you have S-Canon. That's stuff that's kind of been written off. Elements of it may be taken, but at the same time, the majority of it's just like, no, it didn't exist. The prime example of that one is the Holiday Special. And then after that, you have what's called N-Canon or non-canon, and that's the stuff that doesn't really count, like Yoda and Darth Vader's appearance in different Soul Calibur games and all that kind of stuff. After Disney bought LucasArts, though, all of that was wiped out. You had basically G-Canon and T-Canon, so the films and George Lucas's word and the Clone Wars shows, those were your canon from now on, and then anything after that is canon. So the game doesn't exist in canon anymore, despite the fact that there is an MMO going on, because that started beforehand, so again, non-canon. Elements of it are coming back slowly. They've mentioned one of the planets from the second game in the series that, again, very much ties to it as in that regard. And Revan was very, very close. He was so close to coming into Clone Wars at one point. They had him modeled. They had him ready, and then they just pulled the plug on it at the last second. And then in Rogue One recently, this is the only spoiler. I'm going to give you a spoiler right now because it's probably the only thing new enough I'll ever talk about to really, really apply. One of the style of ships that shows up in the Old World universe, the Hammerhead ship, does make an appearance, maybe not as big or as grandiose as it was, but when you take 4,000 years, it's kind of forgiving. That style of ship, at least, still shows up. So it just kind of, there's little elements that are slowly coming back ever so gradually. I'm hoping one day they'll just make it that Knights of the Old Republic is canon, because I was too young to have seen the originals in theater. I was too old to really get hooked on the prequels, so these games became my Star Wars, so I'm a little biased there. Now, the soundtrack of this game, they do borrow from John Williams to some extent, but they did have another composer on this who did a great job of capturing the feel of it, Jeremy Soule. I would say he did an amazing job evoking the feel of John Williams and really capturing that feel with very limited tool sets. I mean, when he was doing Knights of the Old Republic, he had very limited tools. He had to basically use brass instrument, like a couple brass and a couple strings, sound like a full orchestra, just because of the limits of what they could store at the time on them. And this guy, I mean, he has a massive, massive legacy of video game music. You're going to know him from the Guild Wars games. You're going to know him, obviously, from Knights of the Old Republic. A few other BioWare games. He's part of the... Unfortunately, he did Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. Morrowind. I mean, if you know Morrowind, that music, the music that they ended up kind of grabbing again later with Skyrim, you know his music. I mean, this guy... And he did Skyrim as well. I mean, he did part of the Skyrim line. This guy knows music. That's all there is to do it. He knows the music. He knows how to capture that feel. And I think he is probably one of the big unsung heroes, because you can listen to that music, and even if you didn't know what it was from, you would probably get the feeling that it sounds Star Wars-y. Now, the voice acting in this game is very interesting at times. One of the things that really kind of bugs you after a while and almost gets you tempted to just put it on mute is alien talk. Every alien race is represented by a language here. Problem is, it's a loop track. Like, if you let them talk and you listen to them, it's going to sound exactly the same after, like, 10 seconds. You're going to start noticing, oh, it's the same statement over and over and over. And I get it. It would be very difficult for them to do a fully voiced, fully written language for all these races. It's just unfortunate that it became so obvious that they couldn't just cut it together a little bit differently. But again, limitations of the time, I do understand that. one of the big people you see in this game, one of the, again, staple of BioWare, you get Jennifer Hale as Bastila Shan, the second companion you get in the game. She has just, the modern games, you're going to know her as Female Shepherd. You're going to know her as Femme Shep. She is an icon of this. She also did the witch in the Dragon Age games. I'm blanking on her name right now. But it's Jennifer Hale. You know her. You love her. You can't have a BioWare game without her doing a voice in there. It just doesn't feel right. Growing up, I always could have sworn it was Tim Curry in this game. There's a character, Saul Karath, supporting bad guy. I could have sworn it was Tim Curry. I've looked into this. It is not him. Definitely got his feel, though. Definitely nailed that feel of Tim Curry-ness, which is, believe me, a compliment. It's such a big deal for me that it sounds like Tim Curry. It sounds horrible. Dark, nasty, evil. I love it. Just smarmy. Now, the end boss in this game, it's Darth Malak. You were originally Darth Revan. Your apprentice was Darth Malak. As the game goes on, you find out you used to be Darth Revan. You have the option to take that mantle back. You can become Darth Revan again if you really want to. But one of the things is, either way, you're going to have to fight Malak at the end, and it's very much a classic boss fight when you get to him, because if you just straight go head on to him, keep hitting him directly on and on and on and on and on, he's going to keep rehealing, and it's going to take you forever because he gets stronger and higher defenses every time. The other option is you take out all the supports. You basically, he's got people trapped in back to tanks purely so he can sap their life energy and heal off of. If you take out those tanks before you bother trying to take him down, you will take him down a lot easier. Your life's going to be a lot happier in that fight. Again, bring healing packs. Bring your heals. One of the big focuses of this show I'd like to look at is how these older games influenced the games and the franchises that we play today that are coming out in these days. Now, this is a BioWare game. BioWare, obviously, in and of themselves, have had a massive impact on the industry over the years, especially in their own world, because they are a developer that is still up and running. You're not going to see that all the time with the show. You're not going to see developers that are still running on their own, even though they're owned by EA. They're still their own little subset of EA, at least when I'm recording this. We'll see what happens in the next 10 years. But some of the games that have influenced, you have the Dragon Age series, obviously. It's right back. It's that over-the-shoulder view. It's turn-based mechanics as much as you want. You can pause the game and plan out your next step. You can issue orders to all your teammates. You have full control over everything and not just quasi-control. I would say, in terms of mechanically, that is a game that is the closest influenced, the heaviest influenced by it. And you can kind of see that, too, because you have the dragon fights in Dragon Age, and that is, going back to the Krayt dragon fight on Tatooine, that's what they wanted to do. They wanted it to be this epic fight. They wanted it to be this thing that's going to get you killed and get you angry and get you frustrated. But they didn't have it. They turned it into a puzzle point instead. So it feels like the dragon fights in the Dragon Age series have really been the redemption of that. On top of that, you have the Mass Effect series. Again, another big franchise, another legendary franchise from BioWare at this point. That one is more narratively in line with Star Wars. I think Knights of the Republic influenced that very strongly narratively. I mean, it's a grand space opera. Both of them are grand space opera games. Both of them have this core team of companions that you get to know. You do companion quests with, you get to help them better their lives or ruin their lives. You get to help them as you go along. And then we get into this part where I'm just like, ooh, because it just seems like they cut and paste the plot, because you have this galaxy splitting plot. You have a creator race that ruled over the others, and you're trying to take down this deep, dark threat that comes from that era. So you have the Starforge versus the Reapers. You have the Radicans or whatever they are versus the Prothean in Mass Effect, and it very much feels like that. It very much feels like, guys, why don't we just use that plot again? No one's going to remember, almost. The other big thing about the Mass Effect games is that you are stronger if you specialize. If you try and do a little bit of everything, you're going to be a weaker character yourself. It's almost better to have a team of specialists there, just like it was in Knights of the Old Republic. And then the one I can't leave out, because it's part of the franchise. You had Knights of the Old Republic 2, which was done by Obsidian. I'll cover that at a different point. But you also have Star Wars The Old Republic, the online MMO. It's free to play these days if you're looking for kind of a quick fill of BioWare. It uses the same foundations. They actually opened up a studio in Texas for this game. So it takes the same foundations narratively. It has the same kind of concepts that they use in terms of telling their stories, in terms of companions and all that. And it's really the closest we're going to get to a third game. There's actually the first expansion for the game, or second expansion, I think it was, really closes out Revan's story. It's because Revan just kind of ends and he goes to do something. But this closes out that story. It sets a canon ending. It sets canon decisions. It really makes it, you get your closure from this. But they also have a key time skip of about, I think it was 400 years, so that you don't feel like you need to have all the characters that were there before as part of all this. So I just want to give some overviews of the different planets in the game, because I think they are really your big set pieces. Obviously, they're your foundation. That's what roots you really in the Star Wars universe in this. Opening up in the game, you're on Terrace. After your tutorial map, you're on Terrace. And that is kind of a racist planet where humans live in the upper world. Everybody else that's not human lives either in slum buildings or the Undercity. And it kind of gives you a lot of chances to either be a good person or be an asshole. So, you know, light side, dark side, establishing that moral compass at one point very early on. And it's got a battle arena too. So this is a staple of RPGs. You get this one area where you can just get into big fights. They're sanctioned, so you're not going to get in trouble for it. You're not going to have the guards coming after you. And that's its own quest line that kind of culminates in a fight to the death at one point if you choose to take it that far. And you will get admonished by the light side Jedi if you do that. She'll be like, how dare you? The other thing about Terrace is it's very linear. It's not literally one room to the next, but you have your upper city. You have to go through most of that area first complete a key quest before you can go down to the undercity or the lower levels. Then you have to finish stuff in the lower levels before you go to the undercity, which is the absolute slums. That's where people have been banished to. And that mid-zone is kind of the slum area where you have, like, the lower class area where you have all the gangs that are fighting over the control. Like, you side with one gang or the other. Again, cementing, am I a good person, am I a bad person? Really getting your brain wrapped around that very early on in the game. You go to the undercity, there's a big not-zombie plague, big air quotes around not-zombie because it's a zombie plague that you're fighting against that will infect anybody that gets bitten, unless it's you or your companions, because that wouldn't be fun. And then you go through there, you meet another companion, her name's Mission, she's a young Twi'lek girl, she needs help rescuing her Wookiee companion. So you get two companions out of that kind of quest line, and the way that plays out is Mission was abandoned by her brother at one point, so you follow through on that quest line for her personally. And your Wookiee buddy, he was basically exiled from his family for fighting with his claws, basically going feral at one point. So he's been exiled from his tribe for that, and you again get to resolve that when you get to his home planet as well. And from there, you end up getting into a bike race, a swoop bike race, which is pod racing, essentially. And you free Bastila, who is the big Jedi hope. She is the hope for the Jedi Order. She is the hope for the Republic to win this war against the Sith, because she has battle meditation, which can sway the tide of fights. She actually ends up freeing herself and just kind of used you as the distraction she needed to act. At least that's her claim. You can kind of fight her on that if you want. It's cute. She's obviously, if you're playing the male character, she is the big romance option in the game. You can really fall in love with her, and it becomes a big point later on. From there, you get taken to Dantooine, which is where they have the Jedi Enclave in this game, or sub-enclave. They don't go to Coruscant. I think it would have been... I don't think they felt like they could have done it justice in the game at the time, especially back then, especially 4,000 years before the previous games. I think they were arguing it wasn't a thing. Now, on Dantooine, that's where you really get into the sense of, here's your open world. The worlds from here on out are going to be very open, very... go where you want, do what you want, take the quests in whatever order they come. And at the same time, it trains you as a Jedi. You become a Jedi at that point. And it's a very quick training process. It becomes very clear later on in the game why. But there's a couple quests that really stick out to me there. And they did very much a Romeo and Juliet, where two kids of a feuding family were in love with each other. And they basically told their parents, we're going to be together, tough. And on top of that, it also has another quest where a woman has lost her husband and grown very, very attached to her droid. And the droid actually asks you, kill me, destroy me, so she can move on with her life. Which is, again, very sweet sentiment for a droid to come across as. But you do ask at one point how close the two of them got, and you get a very evasive answer. So it kind of lets you make the choice on that, take it as you will. After you finish Dantooine, after you start finding the star maps, you get access to the whole galaxy. And it's all being done on the Ebon Hawk, which is kind of a not the Millennium Falcon. It's a smuggler ship. It's its own thing, but it's very much a nod to the Millennium Falcon at the time. From there, the planets don't come in any order. You can do them whatever order you want. The one I'm going to get out of the way real quick is Yavin 4, the moon of Yavin 4, or a space station around the moon of Yavin 4, because it's just an artifact emporium. It is just a shopping zone. You can go in, buy what you want, get some top-level gear if you need to. Mostly used at the end of the game before you go to the final push. And then you also have Tatooine, because Tatooine, it's a Star Wars game. Of course you're going to Tatooine. It's got a nice town. My main issue with the planet is it feels very unfinished. It feels very rushed. It's got three very open, very large, and very empty maps that are predominantly combat. And you don't... it's a lot of running, not a lot of fighting. This is where, if you're going to be using cheat codes, this is where you're going to be most tempted just to turn on the run cheat, just to get you through faster. For me, one of the neat things about it, I mean, for all it was a very empty planet, you got to work with the sand people, which is kind of a really cool trick and really cool spin on their culture as well, instead of just making them those guys that attacked Luke. But the best thing about this planet, the one thing that redeems it in any way, if it can at all, is that you meet HK-47. And I love HK-47. I will always love HK-47. Another planet that, again, very interesting is Kashyyyk. It's the Wookiee planet. I'm going to assume they have a holiday called Life Day. It doesn't come up, fortunately. Now, it's painted very much as this savage world, this very dangerous world. You do land at one spot, and it is a slaving operation, basically. Like, they've set up a slaving operation here. This is where the concept of Wookiee slaves really gets used to a large extent. And that's all on the top level. The top level, you have the Zerka Corporation. They make an appearance throughout the game in different spots, but this is kind of their big plot line. And they're running a slaving operation, and there's a tribe nearby with your Wookiee buddy's brother running it, who's selling his own people into slavery. Whereas when you go down to the bottom section, like, that's a small area itself. There's a little bit of combat, but when you go to the bottom, it's about 90% combat. You're on the forest floor. It's all dangerous. It's all challenging. It's where Wookiees go to prove themselves, kind of thing. And there's one guy down there, Jolie Bindo, your cranky old man. He's stopping just shy of get off my lawn, and that is a big-ass lawn. But he is the Great Jedi, and this is where he decides, I'm coming with you. He knows your secret. He knows what's going to happen. He knows you are Darth Revan. But he just wants to see how it plays out, which I thought was a nice touch. Like, when the reveal comes around, it's not, how did you not know? You've been around forever. It's a case of, yeah, I knew. I just wanted to let you do your own thing. You had your own story to tell. The other one, now, one of the planets that has a very mixed opinion in my mind, it's Korriban. It's the Sith homeworld. You actually go through a Sith academy while you're there. And it is such a classic RPG world. I mean, you play any RPG. Even when I played through Witcher 2, I came across a lot of this. There's a lot of these puzzles that are just, I would almost say cliched if it weren't for the fact that they've never been packed in so tight before, because they are all packed in on just one planet. There's even a little side quest there that if you do it in your own way, if you do kind of break the rule that it's telling you not to break, you can only survive by answering riddles. And again, the first riddle comes up, I'm like, oh, it's this quest. Okay. And just knocked them all out in no time. Because again, it's a very common thing. It's a very standard cliche. And the way the planet itself is broken up, there's four tombs that you have to go through. And each tomb is basically playing like a classic RPG trope at some point. One, the big confrontation is you're answering questions. If you answer honestly, or if you give him the answer he wants, he will not hurt someone. But if you don't answer the way he wants, he's going to hurt. There's going to be damage done, and you can kind of, which way do I play this kind of thing? Do I be dark? Do I go dark side and protect myself, or do I go light side, take the hit and protect him? Another one, you know, it's, oh, there's a big puddle of acid at one point. Do I use, you know, the fire grenade or the ice grenade? And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, basic logic's going to get you through. The one that really stuck out to me, the one that I thought was a bit of a different spin on things, was Manan. It's an ocean planet. You're on kind of a fairly isolated metal island. Most of what it is, most of this world, it's legal drama, it's procedural drama, it's political intrigue. I had three different trials in the course of this planet, including a companion quest for Jolie, but it's all courtroom stuff, it's all political maneuverings going on between the Republic and the Sith, who both have a stake on the planet, because that's where the big healing element comes from in the universe. And the really nice thing, especially where you find the star map on this planet, is it shows you the good guys, the Republic, the heroes of this story. They'll bend their morals. They'll do stuff that they know is wrong, knowing that they're doing it for the greater good. And that really does, it forces you to look at the game and go, okay, am I a hero because I'm fighting for the side that's supposed to be the good guys, or am I a hero because I want to do what's right? And you can actually work against them at points if you want. And then, of course, the final area of the game, the final planet before the final boss fight is called, it's called the Unknown Planet. It's been called, since then it's been dubbed Rat Ricata, but at the time it had no name. Really didn't have a name in this. What it does is it cements your moral point. Bastila has been captured at this point. So you can either save her, either just as a friend or through the power of love if you've become a romantic companion of hers. Or you can kill her. Or you can just either kill her or make her submit to you as the stronger Dark Lord. Like, this makes, are you going to be a good guy? Are you going to be a bad guy? And then, you know, it's the same way down there with the precursor race that's down there, the older race you've seen throughout this game. they're down there as well. It's one camp is good, one camp is just all about war and death and murder, and you got to pick a side. But from there, you go through a temple, and you end up on the Starforge, and that is, the Starforge is a BioWare ending. It is the final round of a BioWare game. You saw it in the Dragon Age games, you see it in the Mass Effect games, you see it. This is what I would call the most BioWare moment in the game, because it is just a gauntlet of death. If you come in here and you don't have enough med packs or healing skills, you're done. You're going to be loading an older save. That's actually one of the big rules of these games, is save early, save often, and that's why keep multiple save games, because you can easily screw yourself out of it here. One of the other things I love about older games, and one of the things I think is a lost art in gaming these days, is the manual. Any older game you play, I will very much recommend get the manual for the game. Be it PDF, physical, either way, find the manual. This one, not the greatest I've seen, but it still sets the feeling. It comes across almost as a military document, almost as if it's on like metallic paper, the way it looks, because it has just that look of almost circuitry paper, gives you very much a breakdown of everything, and it covers. Most games nowadays, they'll have the codex, and they'll have a help section in the game that will give you all the breakdown on the mechanics if you want. They didn't have the room for that back then. They had the manual, and that will break down what levels, you know, based on your starting class and your Jedi class, what levels you're going to get your feats, what levels, how many skill points you're going to get per level, how many hit points per level, how many that. It breaks it down in every little detail, and it will give you detailed descriptions of what everything does and how that works in the mechanics of the game as well. Not a lot of lore in there, though. Not a lot of history of the world, kind of what the world's like at this point, but that's because it's a Star Wars game, and we have the opening crawl for that. I mean, it's a Star Wars game. Big opening crawl. If you're going to get this game, there's a few mods you're probably going to want for it. One of them, you're going to want to tweak it a little bit to get some higher resolutions. There's both mods for that, and you can just do it through modifying the files in the game. The other one you want, it's basically a restoration mod. It's kind of an unfinished business mod, for lack of a better phrase. And that is just adding in little things that had to get cut, either because it wasn't polished enough or they didn't have time to fully implement it. This one doesn't have a ton. It doesn't have an absolute massive amount of content in it compared to something like Knights of the Old Republic 2 would have. But it's still got content there that you can... It'll let you see a little bit more of the game, a little bit more of what the developers had in mind for it when they created it. The other thing I would recommend, if you're going to get this game, go to GOG.com. When I first found this site, it was called Good Old Games, and that's all they focused on was older games. The reason I recommend this, I mean, they have it on Steam as well, but I recommend GOG because it is DRM-free. You're not going to need to be online to play it. You don't have to have an account active at any given time. And because a lot of stuff we're going to be covering in the show, GOG does the background work for you. I get the older files of the games. I get older copies of the games to run just so I have a more pure experience. I have the more original experience to get a sense of nostalgia, to see if the nostalgia truly holds up. Don't waste your time. Don't fight with DOSBox if you don't have to on older games. This one, it optimizes it for modern systems. And you can get it online, $9.99 US. Pretty good deal for a game of this classic caliber. I would always recommend it. And they're going to have, in their community section, you have people telling you how to get the mods up and running. And it's going to make life a lot easier for you. It's GOG.com. Very straightforward. Very easy to use site. Very friendly site. And these are the guys behind the Witcher games. They get gaming. Now, one of the big questions with this series is, does the game really hold up in today's world? Does it hold up? Have I gotten too spoiled with modern gaming conventions that I can't go back to this? With KOTOR, I'm going to say it holds up. It really does still play well. The controls are modern enough. I mean, it's only from 2003. It's not that old of a game compared to some of the other stuff I'll be doing. It still runs on modern systems with minimal effort from you. It's got a great quest system in it, so you can go in, you can look at the quests you've completed, you can look at what you still have active, you can organize them by planet, by the order you receive them, all that kind of stuff. So it's very easy to kind of keep track of where you are in the game, compared to a lot of the older games where you don't have that luxury. So I think this is one you can get into, no problem. I would absolutely recommend it for anybody that wants to play these games. Go grab it, play it, have a blast, maybe play it a couple times, play as a dark side, even though that's virtually impossible for me in role-playing games. And nostalgia-wise, I think it does hold up. It's a little hard to look at the story without a little bit of a smirk now, only because it's become such a standard, especially with Mass Effect later on. This is actually a really great game to go and look at where BioWare became a well-known top-tier role-playing game developer to a home name in gaming. Like this game cemented them in the gaming art, in the gaming scene. Nowadays, you hear BioWare, everybody knows who you're talking about. Back then, it was more of a niche market. You'd say BioWare, and you'd have even gamers look, you go, who are they? Who are they again? This game made them known. So yeah, I would absolutely recommend going back and playing it then, because this is very much a Star Wars game. If you're looking for a good Star Wars narrative-based game that really kind of looks at light side, dark side, what Star Wars is, what Star Wars can be, I would definitely recommend this over, for example, some of the prequel movies, certain episodes of the Clone Wars, maybe. But this really was the Star Wars game. And when you realize the creative lead on Clone Wars was a fan, you can see a lot of that in the show at that point. You can see a lot of the influence, a lot of the tonal focus of that in the show. So that's it for Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Thank you so much for joining us this month. If you want to reach out to us, you can do that on Twitter, @RoadmapPodcast. Feel free to suggest some older games that we should be playing on this. Maybe share some of your favorite memories of the game we were talking about. Even just ask us some questions. Always happy to talk to the community online. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review. It's the only way we're going to get better. Only way we're going to get more known. Next month, we're going to be playing LucasArts classic adventure game, Sam and Max Hit the Road. In the meantime, in a couple weeks, you can check back. We're going to be looking a little more in-depth at what the adventure game genre is in general, just as a bit of a primer for what we're going to be going into with Sam and Max, just so you have a little bit of a better understanding of what's going on. Thanks again, and have a great month.